seek out that clear teaching. That's why Issues Etc. is so great.
Pastor Jonathan Fisk, host of the video blog Worldview Everlasting, on the value of Issues Etc.
I can't speak highly enough of the times in my life, previous to seminary especially, where it was my lifeline. It was giving me the food that I needed, the clear thinking Christianity, to be able to know what I believed and why I believed it.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. Issues Etc. IssuesETC.org.
Here in America and around the world, people should be free to choose the God that they worship, however they choose, to practice their faiths freely, or to practice no faith at all.
I say it on the authority of the Scripture. If the United States of America forces Israel to divide Jerusalem, God himself will come down against this nation.
Jerusalem must be the eternal, undivided, exclusive capital of the Jewish people. It's a myth. It never was. And there will never be peace until it's shared.
Didgeridoo players in Iowa, love Issues, etc.
I am not of this generation. It has only dawned on me in the last 4 or 5 years that, yes, I actually am getting older, and I sit right there on the very trailing edge, the very last months of the baby boom generation, the last generation that everybody was obsessed with. Now that they're getting older, they obsess only with themselves. But for a long time, the baby boom generation was the obsession of everyone, including in the church. What do we do with the baby boom? Now, the baby boomers are obsessing about another generation, the so-called millennials. Those are my kids, by the way. That generation, I guess the way you measure this, that generation that will live the better part of its life, not the better part, the longer part of its life in the 21st century rather than the 20th century, the millennial generation. And we are obsessed with everything they do and think and say. And especially in the church, we worry about that generation. You've been reading this, haven't you? Articles coming out lately about the millennial generation and why they're leaving church and what the church might want to do in order to keep them or attract them back. Why do we care so much about the millennial generation? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Brett McCracken, author of the book Hipster Christianity, When Church and Cool Collide, will join us. He's also written an op-ed piece in today's Washington Post, How to Keep Millennials in Church, Let's Keep Church Uncool. And then in about a half hour, Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be our guest. We'll be answering the question, can you be sure you're a Christian? If so, how? Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Brett McCracken is a Los Angeles-based journalist. He's author of the book Hipster Christianity, When Church and Cool Collide, and his op-ed piece in today's Washington Post, How to Keep Millennials in Church, Let's Keep Church Uncool. Brett, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd. Good to be back.
Why do we care so much about what the millennials think and do and say and why they're staying or going?
You know, I think it's probably the same reason why everyone cared about the boomers when they were the big new generation. There's just an obsession with youth culture ever since the baby boomers were really the first generation where youth culture became the epicenter of what is perceived to be power, and everyone had to pay attention to them, advertisers and media and all of that. So I think our culture in general looks to the youth a little bit more than it needs to or should. So that feeds our obsession with all things youth, whether it be the millennials or whatever the next generation is going to be. This question of what are we going to do about keeping the millennials coming to church and why are they leaving, I think we obsess about that, probably more than we should as well. I think that youth in general, probably in every generation, tend to leave the church and maybe they come back eventually. It's just a rite of passage a lot of youth go through. They question things. They want to go off and, sow their wild oats or whatever. So I'm a bit concerned when I see the church bending over backwards or capitulating to whatever the younger generation wants or says they want from the church, because ultimately they shouldn't be the ones to define what that is.
Speak from the inside out, because you are one. It took me years to admit that I was a baby boomer, because I have that kind of trailing edge kind of wanting to distance myself from that. But other than the maybe I'm dating myself too much. I mean, other than the kind of the hipster persona, the beard and the vintage clothes and the vintage bicycle and the coffee and everything else, who are the hipsters beyond all the trappings? Or who are the millennial generation beyond all of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to define them as one, you know, entity that's singular in all of its characteristics. I think technology has defined millennials in a lot of ways. We're more narcissistic than previous generations because we all have a platform, whether it's blogs or Twitter or Instagram. We have this audience that we're acting and performing our lives in front of. So I think that amplifies our inherent, you know, human narcissism and pride, and it's become, you know, even more problematic, I think, than in previous generations because everyone feels like they are the center of the universe, and then I think the older generations are perpetuating that by making so many conversations and questions about, well, what do the millennials want? What are they doing? We have to pay attention to that. That just makes our kind of issues with narcissism even worse, and our entitlement that we are entitled to have a say and have a voice, and that we are wiser and we know more about how things should be or what the church should be than the previous generations or what the centuries of church tradition and leaders have said and taught.
What did the church's attempt to, I mean, it's overt, almost kind of obsequious attempt to pander to the baby boomers do? What will the same kind of attempts to pander to millennials do? Mm-hmm. What has it done?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that younger people see through attempts, especially, you know, what I talk about in the book, Hipster Christianity, is just the way that churches are obsessing with being cool and being edgy and having the right fonts and the right music styles and all of these superficial, really, accoutrements that don't have any meaning or substance. They're just all these stylistic things that we think that the youth are going to be drawn to. But at the end of the day, I don't think that they are drawn to that, and they see through that. And if anything, it makes them more turned off that they feel pandered to and advertised to. I think that we risk kind of delegitimizing the church even more in the eyes of youth when we reduce it to something that can be merely stylistic or merely packaging level. And I think beyond that, we don't want to change. We don't want to start reevaluating and questioning everything on the content level either to fit what the polls and what the, you know, articles are saying that young millennials care about these issues, or they believe that, you know, their LGBT friends are, you know, need to be affirmed by churches. And the last thing the church needs to do is listen to that and then go against scripture or what or tradition says on the issue just to meet the demands and the fickle whims of this generation.
How do you read the head-scratching, the public head-scratching that's going on? You know, the articles, one of them that sparked your op-ed piece in the Washington Post about why millennials are leaving the church, this kind of self-searching on the part of the church. How do you read that?
I mean, I think it's a concerning thing anytime people are leaving the church. And, you know, I'm not sure if the numbers are as dramatic as some of the polls and things depict them as. But sure, I mean, there's always throughout history and throughout the world in different places at different times, there have been times when the church has waxed and waned and people have left and come back. And I think it obviously, like, if you're in an area, whether it's Europe, you know, 15 years ago or 20 years ago, or America increasingly these days, when it does seem like things are changing and youth are increasingly not interested or leaving the church, it should cause us concern. Just because it's tragic when young people they deprive themselves of the value of what life in a community of Christ followers can be and what it can add to their life.
So before we go to our break, why do you think, to the degree that they are, millennials are leaving the church?
Why do I think they're leaving? I don't know. And ultimately, I don't think that we need to, like, look to like what the church is doing. And to answer that question, ultimately, the decision to leave church is on the individual. And I know I have lots of friends and peers my own age who grew up Christian, went to Christian college, and they no longer go to church, no longer identify themselves as a Christian. And you know, ultimately, that's on them. That's a decision they have made, and every individual has to decide at some point, do I want to obey, follow after Christ? And if so, I think that it's not a question. You have to be a part of a community and be a part of church, and you can choose not to do that, and it's your decision. And so I think a lot of our problem is focusing too much on what is the church doing wrong and not acknowledging that ultimately, you know, these people have the decision and they can make it, and there's only so much we can do and there's only so much we should do to change.
You suggest kind of turning the tables, whereas the church has been earnestly trying to listen to what the millennials say they want.
Mm-hmm.
You suggest in your op-ed piece that maybe it's time for your generation to start listening to the church. What do you mean by that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think the more I've grown older, I think in my early 20s, I was one of these like very like I had a lot of hubris, like, oh, I know better than my elders, you know, about this and that. But the more I grow older, and I'm 30 now, so I'm not a 20-something, but I've come to see that there's so much to be learned from the older generations, and they have asked so many of these questions that we're asking already before, and there's nothing new under the sun in a lot of ways. So many of these issues have been talked about, addressed, discussed, and I'd rather go seek their wisdom and maybe go read a book by some ancient figure in Christianity or theology or someone who has really devoted their lives to these questions rather than just kind of waxing eloquent on a blog or, sipping beer and smoking a pipe while debating what's wrong with the church with my fellow 20-somethings. I think there can be a lot of meaningless just navel-gazing when it comes to us 20-somethings, and I think we need to stop talking and tweeting and obsessing about hearing ourselves speak and just listen for a while.
Brett McCracken is our guest, author of the book Hipster Christianity, When Church and Cool Collide. He has an op-ed piece in today's Washington Post, How to Keep Millennials in Church, Let's Keep the Church Uncool. We'll talk about that after this.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+. Simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
I'm not a Christian, but I listen to your show because actually you do have some interesting topics.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
Do you believe that there's not one error in the Bible? That's intellectually infantile. You also believe that Jesus is coming again. You promote extremely sexually repressive views.
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
Have fun waiting for Jesus to return. Got news for you. He ain't coming back.
A voice in the wilderness of American evangelicalism, you're listening to Issues Etc.
The theme of the scriptures is the promise of Christ and the coming of Christ and the meaning of that. And you can lose that in pietism.
Dr. Rod Rosenblatt, co-host of the White Horse Inn radio show, speaking at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
The common emphasis is the emphasis on sanctification. Sounds good, biblical, it is. But you get the emphasis on the wrong syllable, and we'll lose our own children.
You can listen to Dr. Rosenblatt's presentation, Making the Case Against Pietism, and all of our presentations from this year's conference on our new audio DVD. For a donation of $300 to Issues Etc. before Labor Day, we'll send you this audio DVD. For more information, look for the DVD logo on our homepage, issuesetc.org.
It's hip to be square. It's hip to be square.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the millennial generation in the church. Brett McCracken is our guest on this Wednesday, July the 31st. Brett, you talk about keeping the church uncool. What do you mean by that? How does the church kept uncool?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that I think the church should go out of its way to like try to be uncool. I just think the whole conversation should be absent altogether in terms of being cool or uncool. Like, what we need to be is faithful, and our focus needs to be on trying to be the most faithful, biblical, Christ-centered community we can be. And the problem is that we get sidetracked so much when we start worrying about, you know, are we cool? You know, what are we doing to appeal to the youth? You know, all of those questions. So I don't know that I don't think the church needs to like have meetings about how to be uncool. It's not that young people are attracted to uncool, quote unquote, whatever that means. They're attracted to a faithful, authentic, a community of transformation where they can be transformed and be grown in their lives if they're willing to.
So the you're not advocating kind of, you know, going the opposite direction rather than trying to be hip, trying to be uncool as the same kind of manipulative ploy, you know,
right.
Allure here.
Right.
You quote from Eric Thanis, a professor of biblical theology at Biola University, where he talks about a perception-driven way of doing things in the church. What is he talking about there? Why is that a danger?
Yeah, I mean, he's talking about this trend of like Christianity looking to polls and trending topics and kind of feeling what's going on out there, what's in the air, and adjusting how it does things accordingly. I think there's a real danger in being too perception minded that we kind of lose sight of, you know, what really matters, which is, are we biblical minded? Are we focused on pursuing Christ selflessly and putting ourselves and what the world thinks of us and our obsession with our image, putting that aside and focusing on being conformed to the likeness of Christ. He compares this idea to like junior hires. You know, junior hires are obsessed with how am I perceived. That's what they think about all the time. And it's a shackling, debilitating place to be. And I think that we need to free ourselves of that. Not that we shouldn't, you know, pay attention to that and be mindful of the statistics and trends, but we can't primarily like define ourselves by that or look to that in terms of what we are doing and what we want to be.
I'm curious what you think about this. You don't mention in the op-ed piece, but I'm sure you've given it some thought. There has been an attendant trend in the church over the last 30, 40 years, along with its attempt to appeal to various strata of generation, to separate those generations. Literally, to segregate them in the life of the church, that everybody has their own little group, even their own worship service, all custom made for them. Has that, in a sense, could that have been part of the contributing factor, the millennials saying, hey, I've reached the top of the strata here, and church no longer for me?
Yeah, definitely. And I have thought about that, and it grieves me to see generations kind of cordoned off from one another and segmented off, because part of the beauty of the church and one of the most unique things about what it has to offer us in this world is the intergenerational, you know, cross-cultural community where so many different types of people are together bound by this one common bond. And where else do you get that? Nowhere, really. And so for the church to kind of go away from that and to set itself up so that you can come to church and only be surrounded by people like you in your age or your life stage, that's just really unfortunate. And I think it speaks to the larger problem of kind of being consumer oriented. The audience is sovereign. You know, we're looking to please them, and we think, okay, well, we don't want to alienate a 20-something by having them have to sit next to a 70-year-old and sing hymns. So let's figure out how to please both audiences by sectioning them out. And I think that that's, you know, the big problem. Really, what we're talking about here is this mentality of, well, the audience knows what's best, so let's adjust accordingly. And I really think that's where we get in trouble.
Now, you said something earlier that I want you to come back to, and I find it difficult to believe. You said the millennial generation is perhaps, if it is possible, more narcissistic than the baby boomers. Make your case there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not a baby boomer. I can't speak to, you know, their narcissism versus our narcissism. And I feel like, you know, with technology letting everyone have a voice, and everyone is so, it makes it so that we almost perform our day-to-day lives by what we share on Instagram or what we post about ourselves on Facebook. And we're just thinking always in terms of, okay, what do we want to reveal about ourselves? How do we want to portray ourselves in this kind of digital social identity world? And I think that is a unique thing to our generation. We've grown up in this world where we can have a self that is completely fabricated from who we really are, but it's how we want the world to see us. And so we can shape that however we want through our digital platforms and our websites and our blogs. And so I think that's one of the core differences with this generation that perhaps is making us more narcissistic than previous generations. But I mean, we're human. We're all narcissistic ultimately.
Has it with that millennial generation, has that the advent of social media and the life that's lived in it so much, mm-hmm. has it inoculated that generation to a large degree from genuine community that the church really is?
I've thought about that a lot when I've personally pondered, you know, what is it about young people leaving the church and not feeling the need to be in a church. And I do think that the social media, just all of this technology, is kind of reframing our notions of connection and community, and maybe it's conditioning us gradually to be less comfortable in physical incarnational communities where we don't know the people next to us and we have to shake hands with strangers during a church service. I don't know. Maybe it is contributing to that. I do think there's something there, and I think we need to think about it and consider that.
Well, I can hear some church consultant right now getting paid six or seven figures by some group of congregations to say, look, and he's got the diagnosis down. He says, look, the millennials live a large part of their life in the framework of social media. The way you keep them in church is you make church a social media experience for them.
Right.
You let
right.
them bring that persona there. That's their attendance, is their interaction that way. What is your response to that kind of advice?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to ask serious questions about what is being lost and what are you sacrificing when you make church a social media digital experience or whatever. I don't think that we should write off, you know, that can't happen and that church can't be recreated in a sense in that way. But I do think that there are some things lost when you don't have that physical, incarnational, you know, in-person space to interact with people. And just, you know, yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting conversation to have, and I don't think that there's a black and white answer either way. I don't think that we should be paying consultants, you know, six figures to tell us what the youth are doing and what they are thinking and how the church needs to change in order to keep them. I think that speaks to the larger problem that that I'm talking about in an op-ed.
A couple minutes left here. The millennial generation will eventually get older. They'll
right.
eventually marry, have kids, do what every generation has. What are your concerns there, facing the future?
Yeah, I mean, I don't lose sleep over it. I mean, I think that a lot of the 20-somethings, the millennials who have left the church, probably will come back once they do kind of mature and have families and realize what an addition it can be for a family and for just your own life to be part of something bigger than yourself and something transcendent, and to be a part of a community that calls you outside of yourself and transforms you and molds you into being who you were created to be rather than who you are. So, I think that church is, you know, I don't lose sleep over it. I don't think we should be fretting and worrying too much, because the church will always survive. It will outlast all of us because it offers, you know, the only true solution to our individual problem of our sin and our depraved state. And everyone at the end of the day wants that and needs that, and hopefully will recognize that.
With only about 30 seconds, you say at the end of your piece, picking up on what you just said, that part of what the millennials not they may they need it without perhaps even knowing it is a story that goes on beyond them.
Yeah.
Does the church have that?
Oh, absolutely. The church has that, and you know, it could be said that the church is the only thing in the world that has that. It's the only thing that will outlast the universe, you know, if you think about it. And that's what C.S. Lewis says in his essay, Membership. You know, the church is this entity that we are invited to be a part of, the family of God. And when all else has passed away and ended its run, the church will persist. And so to be a part of that and in this culture, which is so ephemeral and everything's changing and there's nothing lasts, I think there's a real attraction to that. And we need to play that up in terms of how we talk about ourselves as the church.
Brett McCracken is a Los Angeles-based journalist, author of the book Hipster Christianity, When Church and Cool Collide. He's also written an op-ed piece in today's Washington Post titled How to Keep Millennials in the Church, Let's Keep Church Uncool. You can read this column and find out more about Brett's book, Hipster Christianity, at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Brett, thanks for being our guest.
Thanks so much.
When we come back, it's a basic question that Christians struggle with. Am I really a Christian? You've asked yourself that question. I know you have. Is there a certain answer to it? Is it wrong to give a certain answer to it? Must you have a certain answer to that question? Pastor Brian Wolfmiller, co-host of the weekly radio show Table Talk Radio, will be our guest right after this.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Repentance and forgiveness, sin and grace, law and gospel. More than cliches, real preaching for real people in need of hearing the real Christ. Christ for you and the divine service at St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, Illinois, where we gather every Saturday night at 6 and on the Lord's Day, Sunday mornings at 7:45 and 10. Look for the Church of the Neon Cross on I-55 between exits 30 and 33. Find us on the web, stpaullutheranchurchhamel.org. St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, where there is the forgiveness of sins, life and salvation for the people of God.
Hey, St. Louis. How would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952, Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.
The cross is always relevant. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Technology and the fight for life.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Technology can be used to spread a culture of death, such as sonograms making way for sex selection abortions. But as commentator Eric Metaxas makes clear, technology can also be a huge advantage in the fight to recognize and protect the sanctity of human life. For example, pro-lifers have worked hard to place sonogram machines into pregnancy care clinics, and these high-tech wonders have no doubt contributed mightily to a substantial drop in the abortion rate, as well as a marked increase in the percentage of Americans who consider themselves to be pro-life.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.